welcome to Chaos Considered, where we consider our weird, wacky, wonderful world and share the burden of knowledge. My name is Emily Roberts.
Mine is Claire Minicky.
Welcome back to the podcast. Can I tell you, we are recording this on Memorial Day, so we're cutting it a little close, but you know what?
It's how we like to do it.
This weekend, I had my dad and my stepmom come visit me, so I'm feeling a certain kind of way, you know? I'm feeling a post-family hang kind of way, and I'll let the audience interpret that based on their childhood.
It sounds like you're rested and restored and ready to start your week.
Claire, I took a four-hour nap today.
Yes!
I had to recover. My body, she was like, oh, honey, we cannot do whatever that was.
Yeah, I've been doing a new thing where I'm, like, trying to be social with people after a very long time of not being even a little bit social with people. And boy, howdy, does it take it out of you in the best case scenario?
Casa de Mario.
Casa... Top of the morning to you.
Oh my God. I feel that. All of a sudden, you get fully vaccinated. And to be fair, I also want to hang out with people. But I was an introvert before the germ war. And I'll be an introvert until I die. So it truly is this experience of people being like, okay... Well, it's also me. I want to go do the things that I haven't been able to do for a year and a half.
Yeah.
But they require other people. And a part of me is like, I want to be doing this thing. But also, I don't want to be doing it with so many people all the time, constantly.
It's like, there's a lot of people in my life who I miss very much. Who I have been missing and I have not been seeing. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I can now see you guys. And we can do some things together and hang out and have a good old time. And... I think I initially, upon first meeting, come across as extroverted, and that's a lie. It's a lie, because I'm mostly a solitary creature.
Like a salamander found under a rock.
Yes. Oh, to be a salamander.
Under a rock. I feel that. My stepmom insisted that we go to the Mall of America.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Can I tell you what right now? I'd rather die. I would rather die. I would rather perish. I would rather perish under my little salamander rock than go to the Mall of America Memorial Day weekend. Are you kidding me? That is a death wish.
I had to talk them out of Saturday night.
That's so nasty.
By talking them out, I texted my dad, I'm not driving. You'll have to drive.
Did they still go?
We went on Sunday. On Sunday afternoon. It was still packed.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the first thing that my dad says is like, wow, pretty busy in here. Huh. And I wanted to scream, Claire. I wanted to scream.
They decided to go onto the Titanic as it was drowning.
Yeah. Like, imagine if the Titanic was perpetually sinking.
Yes, and they said, that's where I want to
be. I gotta get in on it.
They're like, I just saw, you know, the Titanic. What did it do? It, like, snapped in half, and then, like, the first part of it, like, shot down, and the other part slowly sunk down. I don't know. They're midway through that happening and saying, what if I just entered that, but in a perpetual
state? It's like
state.
Arriving on the rescue boat and being like, I gotta get on that.
I'm hearing screams. I think it's excitement.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, you know, I'm still working my way up to dealing with the Mall of America. I wasn't ready. Was I ready? No. Did I enjoy myself? No.
Yeah. How could you? I've been to the Mall of America twice. First time, heinous. Awful. We were all exhausted.
Oh my God. It was both of me. I was like, what was the second time? Oh, no. I, yeah, okay.
The second time was fine. The second time was fine. We were there for like an acceptable amount of time for the most part.
Well, we need to give people context. So when we were in high school, because Claire and I went to high school together, as well as like Claire's like basically adopted sister, right? Mm-hmm. We all, you know, same class. My mom was like, we're going to go do a college tour road trip. All right. And this sounds like a great idea, but I can tell you it wasn't. And we went, we went to Chicago.
Imagine no good sleep and then nonstop time together.
Yes.
And then everyone is severely depressed and having a bad time.
Yeah. My mom might listen to this episode, but she knows. Marie, you know you snore like truly heinous. It should be.
I wasn't even remembering that part. I mean, like, it was just that was part of it. Those were some of the nights. I slept on the floor once and it was cold.
Yes. Yes. No, most of it was. Because here's the thing. Claire came in. Claire was like, ooh, you know what? I sleep during swim meets on concrete. I'm going to be fine. And I'm like, my mom snores are the worst thing to try to sleep through. Let me tell you, as someone who grew up, my mom's snores are so bad that there was a... Okay, where do I even start? First of all, my mom has this thing where her snores are loud, but they're also arrhythmic.
That's what got me. I think that's what broke me the most, was one, incredibly loud, of course. But it was the fact that they were arrhythmic. Because like you said, I was like, oh, I've fallen asleep at swim meets and like races are happening and like the little like boom, the little like guns going off. And I am like shivering on the floor, like under a towel on the concrete trying to get some sleep. I've done that. No problem. Because there's like a rhythm to those noises. Ain't no rhythm.
Ain't no rhythm when Marie is snoring. Let me tell you guys. And it's instant. It is as soon as she closes her eyes, no matter what. I have vowed as an adult, I will never share a room with my mother again. But growing up, I don't know if we were what you might call poor. We were poor adjacent. Let's say that. We were poor adjacent. Mm-hmm. Anytime we went on a trip, you know, I shared a room with my mom. And like for my 21st birthday, they like took me to Vegas and I shared a room with my mother and I slept in the bathtub. I've started sleeping in the bathtub whenever I have to share a room with my mom, because it truly is the only way to get sleep. You go into the bathtub, you turn on a white noise fan on your phone, you crank it up to max, and you just lay there. You lay on the cold, hard tile and that's where you find your sleep. My mother snores so bad. I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. But anyways, so Claire came to me. Keep in mind, I am going through a ritual. I'm like, I gotta go to sleep. I have to go to sleep first. That is the number one thing. If you do not fall asleep first, that's your whole night gone.
Yeah.
I have earplugs in. All right. I am in bed. I have a pillow on. I am laying sideways. So I have a pillow on one side. I have a pillow on top of my head. And I have wrapped a blanket sort of on that, securing the whole system. And I am down to get some sleep.
Yes, the breakdown. Yes, yes.
Megan and Claire are like, no, this is going to be fine. We don't need this.
I joined later for some reason. I feel like you guys were like...
You were seeing a show with your sister because your sister lived in Chicago.
Oh.
But Megan was like, I don't, you know, the earplugs are going to hurt my ears. I don't need them. And I was like, okay. And then I went to bed. Claire, how was that night for you emotionally?
Bad. Bad. I don't know if I'm making this up. I seem to remember like halfway through the night, probably at like 3 a.m, like stumbling into a bathroom. I want to say Megan joined me at some point. I feel like some point she procured earplugs. I feel like I didn't go the full night without earplugs. I think I went the first part of the night and then, like, broke down. And then I think Megan, like, followed me in and she was like, here's the earplugs. And she, like, placed them in my hand. And I, like, wept gently and placed them in my ears and got, like, an okay night's sleep.
There you go. And here's the thing. There was a couple nights because we went from Chicago to Iowa, to Minnesota. We ended in Minnesota. So by the time we got to the Mall of America, we were broken people.
Yeah.
We had toured, like, two or three schools already.
Yeah, and that's already an emotional, like...
roller coaster.
Oof. Yeah. Mess of a thing. Applying for places, touring them, all trash. Hate to see it.
Hate to see it, guys.
Yeah, so by the time we stumbled into Mall of America, we had, like, zero sleep.
And we were ready to murder.
And we were ready to murder. Also, I don't do well with malls. Too much stimulation.
There's a lot of crowds, it turns out, in the Mall of America. Lots of crowds. Lots of people.
And it's too visually stimulating. The, like, bright light and, like, the all the coasters. Different, like, the roller coaster. Yeah, like, I was not meant for malls, much less, like,
a mall,
the Mall of America park. With no sleep. Yes, exactly.
Oops. Wow. Anyway, so, yeah, I went to the Mall of America, and my stepmom went to Macy's and Nordstrom's. And then we left.
Well. All right. Gotta get the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, and we had gone to a different mall the night before.
Yeah, why not? Diversify that portfolio, baby. Diversify that portfolio. Yeah, you had to go to the mall and get something that no other mall has. You know, like, that's why you go to Mall of America. You're like, I need to go and get what no other mall has.
I see.
A Nordstrom and a Macy's.
Yeah, it was a little bit just, it was a little bit, like, I felt a little broken.
I would be fully disheartened.
But that's family, guys. Anyways, speaking of being broken.
Oh, no.
Let's get into my topic. So, you know, I say this pretty much every time, but my topic's a little bit shorter this week. It's not, you know, a five-page written declaration on orphan trains or anything of that sort. So, you know, maybe this episode will be only 1 hour long. Maybe it won't. Maybe we filled the first 20 minutes with tales of, you know...
with garbage.
Mall of America. With our, you know, our nonsense. So, if you're still here, welcome to my part of the podcast.
Heck yeah.
So, we are going to be talking about Petrified Forest National Park.
Ooh!
So, here's some just background. It is a national park that is located in Arizona. So, it first became a national monument in 1907. Teddy Roosevelt made it a national monument. He was kind of the wet and wild national park dude.
Ooh, wet and wild, huh?
Yeah. And it became...
Teddy, get it.
We're not doing this. I cannot allow this.
Hey, Teddy, show me what you got, baby.
He says, on one hand, imperialism. On the other hand, imperialism, but make it conservation focused.
I could be your angel. I could be your devil, Teddy Roosevelt. Oh, Teddy. No.
And it became a full national park in 1962. So the park is over 220,000 acres large. Lots of wilderness area were added to it. It's sort of in the desert, so there's a lot of wilderness in there. The park was originally settled by Pueblo Indians. You know, they lived there for thousands of years, and you can even see Native American petroglyphs at the park.
Okay. Oh, quick, this is a bad question that I should... What's a petroglyph?
To answer your question, a petroglyph, according to this Google search I did just right now, is nice. An image created by removing part of a rock surface by incising, picking, carving, or abrading as a form of rock art. So, dope. Not drawing on it, but, like, engraving.
Awesome.
Neato.
Very neat.
So... Petrified Forest National Park is, based on the name, it is known for its petrified wood, which is a really, like, spooky way of saying that it's basically fossilized wood. So basically, over time, this wood became fossilized, and there were quartz deposits, so there are these just, like, beautiful, like, in the shape of trees, like, quartz rocks. If you can imagine, like, these, like, shining... orange, like, almost like gemstones, right? So these are very beautiful rocks. And this park is known for, you know, not just, like, the petrified wood, but also there's other plant and animal fossils, and they have been dated as being from the Triassic period, which is about 200 million years ago. Wow. Back when the ocean was not an ocean and was actually lots of water. Hey, did you know that our planet used to have a lot more water covering everywhere, but then it got stuck in some ice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and also no. Yes, in the sense that I was told this once and then forgot about it, and then you said it again, and I kind of relearned it, but also remembered it.
So, you can go visit this park, but that's not very interesting, and as much as I would love to make a podcast deep diving into each national park, its history, its ecology, etc., that is not this podcast. This podcast is a chaos podcast, and what you're thinking to yourself is, Emily, this is just a national park in Arizona with some pretty rocks made out of trees and fossils, and, like, it's neat. I think it's neat to protect wilderness, but, like, how, what is this park doing on your podcast?
I was genuinely just, like, really happy to be talking about this, and now I'm afraid. I was genuinely like, oh, I love rocks.
So, you love rocks. When you go to a national park, you may be tempted to take a souvenir. I don't know about you, but I, like many people, have been programmed with a deep desire for rocks. You are not supposed to take rocks from national parks.
Yes.
I'm saying it as much as you might want to. It can cause serious effects to the ecology and the environment. And not only that, but it's illegal. You can be fined over $300 and suffer criminal penalties for taking rocks from national parks. So don't do it.
What about just like normal parks?
I think you actually can from normal parks. But you can't do it from like national parks.
Okay, good. Because I did just this past weekend take 3 very, very tiny, just larger than quarter rocks.
But I mean, I still don't think it's a practice you should encourage.
No, I don't think so either.
Because if everybody took a rock, Claire, there'd be no more rocks. Huh?
I know.
Huh? Maybe you're part of the problem.
Well, first of all, obviously I'm part of the problem. And also, I went into like a blind, blissful rock girl moment because I hadn't been outside in so long. Mm-hmm. And I saw a couple of tiny rocks and I was like, this is a green rock and this is a red rock. And this is just a rock that's good to hold. And now going forward, I have to learn.
You
want
the rock, but you can't take the rock. You shouldn't just as a practice.
I shouldn't take
rocks. Enjoy the rock. Appreciate the rock. Take a picture of the rock.
And then put the rock back
down. Feel the rock. Kiss the rock. Leave the rock. Ragnarok.
Yes.
But there is another reason why you don't want to take a rock from this park. Which, as a reminder, is usually a piece of beautiful fossilized wood.
Yes.
There is legend.
Uh-oh.
Of a curse.
A curse?
So this legend first originated in the 1930s, back when the park was a national monument. And the curse is simple as, if you take a rock from Petrified Forest, you will be sorry.
Is that it? You'll regret it. You'll just be like me.
You'll regret it.
You'll be like me right now with my 3 rocks and my shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Either the guilt will weigh on you.
Yes.
Or you might even find that you've become unlucky. And terrible things start happening in your life because you're a rock thief. So, either way, the only way to fix this is to return the rock to the park, often with a note. So, where do all these rocks and notes go? It's since the 1930s, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the rocks cannot be verified as being from the park. So, unfortunately, they end up in what is called the conscious pile. Which is basically a huge pile of rocks, like your conscience.
Oh, yes.
Which is basically a huge pile of rocks, which is just another reason to not take rocks, because you can't just put them back, because they could be contaminated. You know, you don't know what you're carrying back, especially with some of these fragile ecosystems. An invasive plant seed or something like that, or a little animal or a little bug friend could be living in that rock, and you can't just bring that into the national park.
Yeah.
And also, they only want rocks that belong in the national park to be in the national park, and if they can't prove that that rock came from the national park, they can't return it. So you can't just easily fix it if you take a rock from this national park. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
But if you want to see the letters that are attached to all of these rocks,
yes,
You can go to the Rainbow Forest Museum, which is located at the National Park. And there is an entire room dedicated to letters from people claiming that they had been affected by the curse and trying to return the petrified wood that they had taken.
Obsessed.
Obsessed. So, you know, this is a little bit weird. That's sort of all the concrete information I have about this topic, but I will be doing dramatic readings of some of these letters.
Yes!
Here are some of those stories.
Yes.
This felt like the law and order. I was trying to make a law and order joke. And these are their stories. And these are their stories. Bum, 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 bum. Do, 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 do. Doom, doom. Ahem. From 1975. I took these stones when I was there in August on my vacation. Is this beat poetry? Oh my god. Anyways. I took these stones when I was there in August on my vacation. And since I've been home as of this day, had nothing but bad luck. One, I bought a beautiful vase from Mexico. My daughter broke it.
Get a new daughter then. Okay, go off.
Two, a couple of weeks later, my dog was killed by an automobile instantly.
Oh no, I guess get a new dog.
Three, well, if this is your solution. Three, I found out my sister-in-law is dying of leukemia.
Oh no. Oh no. I can't say get Four. A new sister-in-law.
Well, they probably will.
No!
And now my cat was just killed by the dogs next door.
Oh no, a murder most foul.
Murder most foul. So I find it interesting, just as a comment, that a broken vase
made it
level. The best, like, that was number one. That was like first things first. My boss.
Also, like, I think it's funny. I think the ranking in general is hilarious. Leading it, because I could make it. It would make sense to me. What would make sense is to lead in like with inconsequential to most consequential. Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas vase would make sense.
Maybe this is a timeline.
But the fact that
maybe this is a timeline.
The sister-in-law dying of leukemia is kind of in the middle somewhere.
It's the meat of this sandwich.
Makes no sense.
Okay, ready?
Okay.
This is a letter from 1980.
Ooh.
I wish we had some dramatic music. Can we put some dramatic music under this?
If you get me dramatic...
Is that too much work for you?
If you get... Do I have to find it? If you get dramatic music for me, I'll put it in.
I'm not doing that. Upon returning home, we first found out that my stepmother had kidney failure. Then our dog died. Our central air conditioning went out, and then our freezer. I had a really close call in having a bad auto accident. Our truck broke down, needing major repairs. Our cat was killed. And last night, close by our house, a gas well blew out a cap, causing us to be evacuated from our home for a while.
I feel like with each one of these, I'm just getting like a bouquet of like animal death.
Yeah, a lot of animal deaths. Okay, I think this is the last of the animal deaths. Now we're going to rapid fire through a bunch of separate letters. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. It took 3 years to convince. The final straw was when I stepped through the ceiling of our new house.
Okay, someone stepped through the ceiling of their house.
Can you imagine being stuck in the ceiling and be like, Deb? Deb, we're sending the rock back.
Deb, it's the rock again. I swear
it's
to God.
It's the rock.
Honey, I've been telling you for years.
It's the rock. You shouldn't have taken that rock.
I just really like that was the final straw.
Yeah. So here's another one. My bike has been stolen and my feet had blisters the size of my hand.
Oh.
And I know my side hurts and it may be a hernia. And worst of all, me and my girlfriend are about to break up.
Oh. It is funny to hear this one thrown in with everything else. Curse
yeah,
related.
Yeah, it kind of de-escalate a little bit.
He was like, I wore bad shoes once, and then also...
I'm getting a hernia.
And also
my girlfriend's
I might,
breaking
no,
up with
he's
me.
Not getting a hernia. He's like, that's a possibility.
It could be. You never know.
I have hernia potential. And that's thrown in here with like loss of a loved one. all these animal deaths. He's like, my bike got stolen.
Listen, sometimes all your dogs, all your cats, all your sister-in-laws are dead. And also your hernia, maybe.
Damn.
Your hernia adjacent.
Your hernia, at the very least, hernia adjacent.
Okay, here's another one. I really like this one. This one feels like something I would... It feels like it's very on brand for me, except I would never take a rock from a state park.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay. This little rock wanted to go home. Please take care of him. I did. Put him out where he can be among the moonlight and shooting stars of that gorgeous desert.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's beautiful and weirdly intimate.
This rock's a little friend.
It almost feels like an ill-fated love. Where it's like...
Well, it feels tragic because we know where the rock ended up. The rock ended up in the conscious pile.
He's not under those shooting stars.
No. Sis, I understand if you love him, let him go. But you should never have taken him in the first place. It's like, I get it. You love the baby that you kidnapped. But it's not loving that baby to kidnap that baby, huh?
Well... You're saying this to someone who just recently stole some rocks. And I'm saying I get it and I don't condone it. Okay?
This is a targeted attack.
This is a target. This whole thing is a targeted attack. I'm changing my ways, Emily. Never again.
Yeah. We're going to have a sharp decline in viewership. Because people are going to be mad that I told them not to take rocks.
It's hard. I'm a
seashell fiend, so I get it too, but you shouldn't take seashells either.
Damn it.
The birds need them.
Yeah.
The birds need them.
I'm not
them.
A seashell kid. I haven't spent enough seashell time.
The birds have to eat the seashells or else they don't have enough calcium, and then their eggshells are too brittle, and then the eggs don't hatch.
See, that's a problem I didn't know existed until
moment. Yeah, so you really shouldn't be taking the seashells either because they also play an important role in the ecosystem.
This is the thing is I've never had an emotional attachment to seashells. You know what I mean? Mm. That's never been like my vibe. I am a sucker though for dumb rocks. Not cute rocks. Not even like a quartz moment. Or like a fun rock moment. It's literally just like, that's a little rock and it fits nice in my hand. What if I thieved it? Which is also bad.
Hey, wow. Interesting sensory processing you have there. Anyways. Okay. Found this in my room. You can have it back. It's bad luck. I got busted last night.
For what?
The rock is a snitch.
The rock snitch? Busted for what, though? What are you busting it for?
What are you busting for? Was it the devil's grass?
Was it the devil's grass? Was it the green juice? Mm. No, that wasn't it. That was it.
The green juice? You know what? Someone's had to put weed through a juicer.
Surely.
Someone's had to have done it.
I partake. I get it. As someone who has partaken. In the juice.
I juice. I don't juice. Another one just says, please forgive my sin.
Okay. Okay, please forgive my sin. Please forgive my sin. Okay. Did Jesus come to them one night and was like, hey.
There were a lot of letters that were specifically flavored like, I thought I was a good Christian, but I realized I'm nothing more than a thieving sinner. And it's, please. It's between you and Almighty now. Amen. I wash my hands of thee, rock.
That's a lot. That's a lot, folks. Hey, folks, that's a lot. It's a lot. You're processing a lot right there, and I get that. Let who is without sin put back the stone, I guess.
The first rock.
Oh man, that curse, huh?
Okay, our last one, one that I thought was fun. One note just reads, "You were right."
Okay. I like that.
Short, sweet, to the point.
Mysterious.
Mysterious.
Did they have animal deaths? Did they get busted?
Did they get busted? Oh my goodness, I skipped one. Oh my gosh. Sorry. "These miserable rocks have caused pure havoc in my love life. By the time these rocks reach you, things should be back to normal. If not, I give up. Dateless and desperate."
Oh, that's my favorite one.
I mean, they almost slipped through the cracks.
It almost slipped through the cracks. It's my favorite one. Because it feels like not even a side character, but just one of those like meaningless characters in the background of her love story. You know, I'm the middle of her rom-com, you know, she just went on a quirky adventure. She's about to run to the airport to get her SO. And like, she's like, "I'm going to have a cute little montage where you see me like package up this rock and ship it away because of the chaos it brought to my life and how it helped me find myself." And I'm glad to have heard her story. What?
Sisterhood of the Cursed Rock.
Exactly. That's more of the energy I want in my rom-coms. Thank you.
Yeah.
More rocks, actually, would be great.
More rocks. Rocks. Rom-com. Rock-coms?
Rock-coms.
Rock-coms.
You found your way to it. It's a rock-com.
So, now, what is the curse? So, in all actuality, it's probably not cursed. But, I mean, it could be. I mean, I haven't done a personal vibe check on it.
You haven't stolen a rack, so I guess you don't really know.
I don't know. But it's a really effective way to discourage people from taking rocks in the park. And let me tell you, the park rangers are not arguing against it. So, you know, maybe it is unlucky. Either way, don't take rocks. And I hope you enjoyed these dramatic readings. And as just a little bonus fun fact, funnily enough, Netflix mentioned the Petrified Forest curse in the movie Dead to Me. And it sparked a whole new wave of people fearing they'd been cursed. And they were like calling the national park like, "Oh my God, I'm going to die. Because I took this rock."
Well, I'm sorry about your upcoming death then.
Well, I'm sorry about all your dogs, cats, and sisters-in-law.
Dang, man. And then also your maybe hernia.
Your hernia, your love life.
Your love life, your rock.
There's so much that could go wrong. Or just, it's just sin.
Yeah, ambiguous sin. You're busting.
There's truly so much that can go wrong if you take a rock.
Mainly curses is what I'm hearing. Maybe some stuff with the ecosystem, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? Mainly curses.
There's also like a couple letters that were written by kids that were just like very clearly the parent forced the child to write this.
For sure. Kids be doing that. And I love the punishment that they were forced to write.
Right? I mean, you gotta, so you can't take rocks, kids. Stop it. That's it. That's my story. I'm glad that we were able to get through this. I mean, if you're listening to the podcast, hopefully Claire has patched it together. My dog interrupted this recording about 40 times. About 40 individual times.
Oh, all with brand new noises. I like that because it kept me on my toes.
I live in the world's worst stomp concert.
A concert every night. I remember the first time I watched a stomp video, a stomp movie performance.
A commercial? Infomercial?
Infomercial?
I've seen infomercials. I do think I would get bored after about 2 minutes.
Oh, sure. Well, I remember watching a whole performance because our teacher didn't want to teach us. So she put that on. And I remember being blown away, actually, as a little third grader. I was like, wow, everyday objects, huh? That's incredible. Straight up, that rules. Because that's the kind of person I was in third, fourth, fifth grade up till now, today.
Yeah. Okay, tell me, what are we doing? Why are we here?
I'm so glad you asked. So actually, this one was something that you suggested a long time ago.
I'm sure I remember it.
Don't worry. It has to do with bananas.
Bananas.
And this is the thing, my love, my light, my dear. Something that I have found doing this podcast is that if you dig long enough,
yeah,
everything will be bad globally. And also, maybe there'll be genocide. And I find... like, any happy thing that you find, it's like, oh no, there's colonialism in there somewhere. Or, oh no, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of the things that I learned about bananas that I thought, like, oh, I need to dig a little bit deeper and, like, learn some banana basics. A lot of them...
Oh no, you should have looked up banana plantations. What are you doing?
I said banana basics, but yes. And, there's a lot of stuff in there with that, you know? A lot of the things I learned about bananas, some of it, a good portion of it was stuff that I had learned about at an earlier date and then had forgotten about. And then to relearn it all now and realize how much of a problem it is today was, you know, rough. But that's okay because... on the other side of things, the positive twist, this is the warning, the positive twist that we'll eventually reach are people are trying to approach this problem in a number of different ways.
Great. So Claire's really going to make us feel good. She's going to really like hurt another heartwarming story from Claire. Really holding up her premise. From the podcast.
There are things in this that genuinely spark joy for me, but not the first part is what I'm warning you. You know, right?
Okay.
So, let's talk about bananas. I mean, what could go wrong?
Are you saying we should go bananas?
Let's go bananas for bananas. I think I went into this and I was like, bananas. Bananas are so fun. They're so funny. Oh, bananas are so cute. I love a good banana. How do you feel about bananas? You feel good about, you like, are, do you find them edible?
Okay, we all know this about me, which is that I'm not a normal human being. And what I do should not be replicated. Mm. I can only eat a banana if it's green.
Okay.
Any, like a yellow banana and beyond, that's mush, and it feel bad in my mouth. So I have to have a firm vegetal banana.
I think that's very fair. I'm okay for the most part with bananas. I tend not to like banana flavored things, like a banana Laffy Taffy.
Oh, I love banana. Like, ooh, if you get me the Wonka...
You got this. You got this. Hey, King, you got this.
I don't
have You got this. Hey, King, no, you got this. You got this. What were you trying to say? You got this. What? Memory who? You got that memory. Stop covering your eyes. Why are you crying? Stop it. You're fine.
Baby, she's got it. God. Runts? Is that the word?
Did you say runts?
Runts?
I wouldn't know. I'm not allowed to have candy. For legal reasons.
It is runts. Banana runts.
What is that?
Sophia gets mad at me because she'll buy a box of runts. And she's like, she'll have two boxes. She has to buy me my own box. She's like, you cannot touch my box because you're nasty who's going to eat all the bananas out of it. And I'm like, I am what I am. I have never pretended to be something I'm not. And I will eat just the banana. But the good news is if you go to some candy stores, you can just get a loose bag of banana candies.
Yum. What I've always wanted. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I like banana, like, baked good.
Oh, yeah. But, like a banana bread moment, are you talking about?
Yeah, it's just hard for me to eat a banana because of its texture.
I think that's very fair.
The taste.
I think that's very fair.
Did you ever get braces, Claire?
Sure did.
It's like when it triggers the same thing that when they put the mold in the top of your mouth. Mm,
yes.
It's like not as bad, but it triggers the same like vibe in my brain.
See, I always found that to be kind of satisfying.
Oh, I vomited every time they did that because I have a gag reflex.
Oh.
And they'd be like, just breathe through it. Just breathe through it. And I'm like choking on my own vomit. Like,
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Tell me about bananas.
Okay. Well, bananas are herbs.
Yes.
Most closely.
The best herb.
Yum. I think it's because their trunk is succulent. Which I don't exactly understand what that means, but that is part of the reason why it's classified as
it's
that.
It's a succulent trunk.
Ooh, nasty. Okay, well, moving on from that. So what we eat is technically a fruit, but they've bred the seeds out of it, so it's sterile, essentially. Mm-hmm. Which is a cause, as we'll find out, for a lot of the issues with bananas, because essentially they're all clones of one another. There's no, like, they're not reproducing naturally. You're essentially,
you took the evolution out of the picture.
Oh, sure did. Sure did. Just yoinked that right out of it and said, hey, what if we just made a bunch of clones and made it like the dominant produce in so many countries, nothing could go wrong with that.
Well, because there's different types of bananas.
Oh, there's thousands.
But there's one banana
thousands of different
that gets
type.
Produced.
It's the Cavendish. It's the Cavendish banana.
Oh, Cavendish.
Cavin, wish you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So, essentially, because they're, like, commercially grown and sterile, the species is struggling due to this Panama disease. It's Panama's disease. It's TR4, specifically. That's the variation, I guess. It is essentially eventually going to wipe out all bananas as we know it. Like, there's, like, a pretty much 100% this is gonna happen. Because when this disease hits these trees, when the disease hits the bananas.
When the disease hits the trees. That's amore.
They essentially, once it hits them, they essentially can't plant trees there ever again.
Oh, fun.
Specifically those trees. They can't, the bananas trees.
The Cavendish bananas.
The Cavendish bananas. Mind you, there's thousands of other different types of bananas, but we're only growing Cavendish right now. Why?
White people?
Well, yes. And also, also the exact same thing with the same disease happened to this one, to the old one. So essentially, before the Cavendish banana, there was the Gros Michel, otherwise known as Big Mike. That was...
Big Mike!
It was the Big Mike.
Big Mike, he was gone too soon.
He was.
He took a rock.
He took a rock and then he was cursed to get a variation of the Panama disease. What ended up happening, though, is that essentially all these, like, banana people were like, hey, we're gonna... You find a variation of banana that looks essentially the same to the Big Mike banana, except it's way worse. And we're going to hope that no one notices how bad it is because it looks the same.
The Cavendish is the inferior banana. So are you telling me that there's better banana species, like better flavored bananas out there that we just haven't grown because they look different?
Yeah.
Okay. That's hard. That's hard to grapple with, huh?
Yeah. Well, so it's a couple of things that I would like to say about this, right? So, as we've stated, we used to have Big Mike. Big Mike was great. Big Mike. Big Mike.
Gone too soon.
Gone too soon. Big Mike. We used to have Big Mike, and we marketed for Big Mike. Big Mike was huge. Every family was into it.
It was big.
It was big. Big Mike. So loud. So we had Big Mike, and we had done a lot of marketing to get Big Mike popular, right? We put a lot of effort into it. You know what I mean? We changed the way that we did produce to make sure that we had Big Mike. Yes? And then all of a sudden, Big Mike is straight up a
pop star.
What?
Big Mike's like a pop star. Yeah.
Essentially, because he was the best. Gone before his time.
You know, died early.
Died young. Hate to see it. It was a tragedy. So it essentially became commercially extinct, and they needed a new banana that was resistant to this strand. Whatever. They made this Cavendish banana, which looked a lot like it, except tasted worse. So then they could continue producing and making food or whatever, making these bananas, getting that money, love to see it, except they did the exact same thing wrong, which it's they're still all clones of each other. So this is inevitably going to happen again. And it is happening again. So it's spread through a lot of Asia. And I think in some parts of Africa as well. In Latin America, for the most part, we're good. For the most part. But it's kind of just a matter of time. Because all it really takes is someone who has like walked through and gotten some of this like whatever on their boots, and then just walked into another banana field. I'm saying words, but it doesn't take much to totally infect it. By the time you actually know what's going on, your entire crop is going to be gone. You know what I mean? Like this disease has been known to wipe out like an entire country's crop within like 4 years.
Rough.
So it's kind of just gonna happen. Like we're postponing it as long as we can. It is kind of inevitable.
Yeah, we need to diversify the banana market.
Yes, big need to diversify it. And there's a number of reasons why people struggle doing that. Some of it has to do, a lot of it has to do with like what consumers are used to. So certain bananas, different types of bananas are good when they're green. Okay. And you know, like the consumer might not go for it. Cause like, especially
I would say all bananas, I would say bananas are good when they're green.
Emily, you're going to be the one You're going to be the one to change this. I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
But like, specifically Americans are very visual shoppers, right? Which is not great. And so, you know, there's certain species of bananas that are best when they're brown. And, like, it's been, like, beat into Americans' heads that, like, if it's brown on the banana, that means it's, like, overripe. So there's, like, a lot of things that are, like, it doesn't look exactly like what you're used to, or if it's smaller or whatever. We've just become very dependent. So that's not very ideal. We know that it's inevitable. I also learned a little bit about banana republics.
Like the clothing store.
Which, I'm glad you brought that up, because I immediately looked up, because I remember hearing what a banana republic is and like not really understanding it or whatever. But essentially, these like banana companies way back in the day said, hey, I want to mass produce this product. And it's like, well, this is kind of the worst thing to do it with, because bananas will go overripe so quickly. You have to transport it so far. Like, how people won't be able to afford it, and you're trying to get them interested in it? No way. And they said, what if we took a, let's say, military tactic to it, went into Latin America countries, took it over with genocide, made them grow this. And let's say they just didn't have to pay for labor. Oops.
Oops. Just cut that cost out.
Oops. That's how they cut the cost out. So the entire structure of Latin America was changed by these quote-unquote banana republics, which is essentially means it's not controlled by its people, but instead by American banana companies, which straight up happened.
Oh, straight up America is still controlling America and governments and getting involved with elections and... Yeah, no, it's guys, very bad. Colonialism is still real, and America is still participating in it. We have our own special brand. I'm going to get on the American History soapbox for just
Please
one second.
Please do.
So, I know, like, when we talk about colonialism, we either talk about it in terms of, like, manifest destiny as something that happened, like, to Native Americans, like, hundreds of years ago, right? Like, not something that happens now, which, you know, it still does. Or it's like, oh, okay, but at least we're not like the you know, like the British or the French who like went in. And it's like, no, we had our own special brand of colonialism where we literally were like, okay, so North and South America are ours. We're just going to call dibs. But instead of like going and occupying like a lot of other countries did, we're just going to go and like rig elections and basically control the economies of these countries. And that only got worse during the Cold War, guys. So this is a long tradition. This is why we have Puerto Rico, by the way. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico did not just want to join the United States. We straight took that from Spain.
Not great.
And not great. We thought about taking Cuba. We thought about it. Did not. But basically, I mean, the United States is still determining, like, the Haitian minimum wage, you know what I mean? Like, we politically and economically control our neighbors because we're the worst. Anyways, put that soapbox away.
it's bad out here.
And then we blame people for wanting to come here because we've taken away all opportunities in their countries. Oh, got them.
Bow, 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 bow. It's dark outside.
Uh-oh.
And let me...
great name.
Oh, no. I think they they named themselves that and then originally started out by selling, like, military-looking clothing. Because, of course... Of course. Mind you, I'm like, I'm looking up stuff about bananas. And it's like, oh, God. Oh, no. It's so bad out here. It's so bad. So bad out here.
Who would have thought? Bananas.
Bananas. But Dan Coppell, who has, I guess, done a lot of research on this topic and what have you about...
Maybe I'll do a deep dive into Banana Republics.
Honestly... Well, that would be rough, but you can if you want to.
Uh-oh, permission.
Uh-oh. Dan Coppell, who has written at least one book on this, said, essentially, and this is specifically regarding how we made that little switch to the Cavendish. He said, they invented bagging, boxing, they invented ripening rooms, and they come up with all of these ways to make the Cavendishes work. And then they gamble that people are not going to care that it tastes bad. He essentially said, Cavendish are straight up trash, and we only got into them because of the aesthetic of them. And hey, it worked out. I don't mind banana.
I want to taste all the other bananas. There's 1,000 banana friends I haven't tasted.
Oh my goodness. I was listening to this video of this guy talking about like these different types of bananas. He's like, well, we're trying to branch into kind of like dessert bananas that are like extra sweet. And he was like showing these different types. There's ones that are like.
So if you think about like apples, I mean like if you lived your whole life only eating Red Delicious, you would think that's what a good apple tastes like. But it's the worst apple.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I recently got roasted very, very badly for a handful of weeks by both my sister and our friend Latia. Roasted so bad because I bought Red Delicious because I didn't know better because I forgot that different apples taste different. I didn't know that was a bad tasting apple.
When did you buy it?
Like two months ago.
Oh my god, out of season too. It's an out of season Red Delicious. It's gonna taste.
It was really bad.
It's gonna taste like styrofoam.
It was really bad. And they roasted me so bad.
I live in Minnesota now. So, like, I live in the land of the good apples. Okay? It is Honeycrisp land up here, baby. Like, I could name... I'm a little bit of a crazy person. I care a lot about apples. You've triggered me.
Oh, no.
Listen. Top apples. A, Honeycrisp is the best apple ever invented. Crunch, crunch, thank you. Cosmic Crisp is newer on the market. It's coming out of Washington State. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It has less of a tang. It has less of the tart bite that Honeycrisp has. I like Jazz. I like Pink Ladies. I can do okay with the Macintosh. Granny Smith, depending on the day. Those are my apple opinions.
And we've talked about this before. I was essentially told by, I think, Emily and Maddie that I needed to go up to the Wisconsin State Fair or some state fair.
Minnesota State Fair.
Oops.
So, here's some context.
Oops.
The Honeycrisp, which is the best apple ever invented, was created by the University of Minnesota. And each year, the University of Minnesota It has a whole section devoted to apples where they have all their new varieties of apples and then you try them and you vote on them and they have the state fair people vote on the best apples. And so that's how the Honeycrisp apple came to be, is that it was developed and then voted on during the Minnesota State Fair.
Wow.
Also, the Wisconsin State Fair.
I'm sorry.
Minnesota State Fair is one of a kind, baby.
Oopsies. Oopsie whoopsies.
Hateful.
I went up to...
It is hateful, the slander that you've just done in my house.
I've done it more than once, too. I routinely get Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota mixed up for, like, what they have. And it's bad. It's bad. Routinely, I do.
The Minnesota State Fair... I don't know if it's the largest state fair in the world, but it's probably the most famous state fair in the world.
I wasn't going to argue.
You should come up. You should come up to the state fair because, boy howdy, there's a whole barn that's dedicated to baby animals. And by that, I mean they get animals in that are heavily pregnant, they film the birth process, and then they play the videos over the pens of the baby animals. And so you come in to look at the baby animals.
That's a lot.
And then above each of the baby animal things is just videos of, like, a pig giving birth.
Body horror.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's fun.
That sounds like a blast. Well, speaking of varieties. So one solution to this, in Ecuador, they're doing a lot of research and trying to, like, propagate different types of bananas to find, like, and create a resistant strain. Because, as we know, boy howdy, we don't got a lot of time. That being said, if the class remembers, we kind of, these bananas are sterile. And they don't have seeds. So how are they doing that? Well, in every 12,000 bananas, they can find about one seed. So.
Okay. Okay, I'm listening.
So they have to go through all those bananas. Maybe they'll find a seed. And then they have to themselves, like cross-pollinate whatever, to see if they can maybe, hopefully, make something resistant. So as you imagine, they've been working on this a while, haven't gotten very far. They're working on it, they're doing great, they're getting closer every day. But that's hard.
Which guy who has the banana mushing jab? Who's just the mush for seed?
I saw the process too. They literally like, they like open up that banana, they literally smush it down onto the grate, and like you'll see like, oh, there's like two, they found a seed, and it's like the thing didn't, the seed didn't fall through the grate, but they're just the mush did.
And then they're like, they're trying to basically turn back time and rebreed. Rebreed, make banana have seeds again.
Yes.
2020.
Yes.
One.
Yes. Except they both have to do that and then also...
Also find...
Create something that is both resist... It's hard because they have to find... This is not a good...
It's resistant, but you don't want to change the appearance of the banana either.
Yeah. And then it's like they also want it to taste okay.
And look the same and act the same for storing.
And specifically for storing, like, ripeness and whatever, it has to be able to, like, maintain because it's being shipped really far and whatever.
Just choose a different banana.
Well, and people are also banana. People are also trying that, too. They're also trying that, too. So that's one element of how people are trying to fix it. They're trying to create resistant strands. And they're starting to think, hopefully, the conversation is, hopefully we're not going to make the same mistake as we did last time, which is like, what if we made a bunch of clones? We have to stop making clones.
Claire, didn't I just send you an article about someone making fibers from banana or something? Is this where this started?
This is where this started. Emily!
And then you took a couple detours, huh?
And I got broken down. But this is where the story turns, okay? I'm saying okay. I have positive things to say. We're just only now getting to them, okay?
Okay.
Because it's dark outside, okay? It's dark outside. It's hard out here. Genocide happens, and it's bad. And we're trying. It's dark. It's bad. Okay, so on that end of things, we need to start kind of diversifying our banana portfolio. We're trying to make sure that we're crossbreeding it or whatever and making resistant stuff. Great.
Bigger, better, super soldier bananas.
Yeah. And, you know, we got to get more back to the heart of things. Be like the Big Mike, you know? That's where we're trying to go, except more diverse. So we have that going on. Somebody else who's doing something. This is all going to be somebody else that's doing something, right? Somebody else that's doing something is it's called Barnana. Doesn't matter. Essentially what they're doing is they're working, they're trying to reduce banana waste. So essentially, like farmers and like people or whoever will send them like bananas that are maybe don't look as pretty or whatever. And essentially they're able to make these snacks that are kind of like dried out, which is one avenue for helping, but it's not going to be enough to kind of fix the huge waste problem, right? Because that's the thing, is we know that they don't, like, bananas don't hold up super well. So, essentially, in America, 50% of our annual production of bananas goes to waste each year. So what needs to start happening, right, is we need to start, like, having alternative solutions so that we're using these things. It's, like, a couple different facets, right? So we need to change public opinion on, like, what we buy. Like, we don't always need to have something that looks identical to the next thing. It doesn't have to be the perfect shape to still be a good fruit, right? And then the other side of things, we all...
Stop body shaming
fruit. Stop body shaming fruit. Let them be nasty. Let them be funky.
Let them be nasty. Let them be natural.
Let them be natural. So, essentially, the guy that created Barnana was having a little TED talk, right? And he was talking about the waste that occurs. And he broke it out into two sections, right? He broke it down into the production, which is food loss, and the consumption, which is food waste. So there's stuff that we can do on our side of things, of like how we buy our food, using all of our food and being intentional with it. There's like consumer stuff. And then there's stuff on the other end, which is how are things harvested? How are we handling these things? How are we processing and packaging these things? So he was kind of talking about also destigmatizing waste for big companies, which I was kind of iffy about. But the idea is we need more transparency so that we can actually start handling the problem. So be honest with your waste so that you can actually have a productive solution.
Yeah.
So that's some of the ways the conversation is changing. That's one of the ways on waste reduction side, things are getting better. Another thing is in Ecuador, there's some research going on about using banana bioethanol. So essentially, the plant itself is incredibly wasteful. Bananas bloom, flower, produce once, and then straight up just beef it. They die.
Like an octopus.
Like an octopus. Exactly like an octopus. And then they have this huge trunk that has to get cut down. It's very wasteful for very little return. So, with all of this waste, Ecuador is one of the, I think it's the largest exporter of bananas. And there's been some research done saying that if they were able to put, and this is only looking at two locations, if they're able to put two locations for power stations, creating bioethanol products, they could provide 10% of the bioethanol demand in Ecuador. And it would provide 55% of the total electricity for that specific province.
That's a lot of electricity from banana.
Yeah, from banana waste. Because they're talking about the trunks and like the stem of it as well. So, that's another fun thing. Now we get to what Emily brought us to.
Oh my god!
So, as far as the waste produced by the plant itself, probably the best thing going forward, if we're looking at reduction, best way to handle it is going to be things that prioritize turning it into fertilization or animal feed, either one. Going forward, that will be the best. Yes?
Yeah.
One thing that they have found is really interesting is that these, like, the trunks and what have you can be turned into textile and used as an alternative source to cotton, which is really important. Now, that alone won't be able to solve the waste problem, but that could, if we made that very efficient, start becoming an alternative to cotton, the more that we invest in it.
Also, yeah, you know, you close the sort of loop of, because I'm sure in the areas where you grow banana is not the same place where you grow your cotton.
No.
So, for those local communities, if they don't have to go get cotton from somewhere else and they could be self-sufficient and just create banana textiles, then that's another way for those people to be independent. And can we just let people be independent? Thanks.
Yeah, so that brings us to TexFad, which it is like a Ugandan business where essentially what they do is once people have like obviously taken down the fruit, yum, 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 they cut down the trunks and they cut them into celery-like chunks. They dry those chunks out, then they feed it through an extractor. And then the fibers dry again until they feel kind of like a silky yarn and they're strong as rope. And then people, like specifically this company, has been making a lot of things with it. So one of the big things that they're creating right now are these like really intricate rugs. They create about, I think one individual can create like a rug within a month. They're about $500. Really well made, really strong. This like banana fiber apparently, absorbs dye way, way, way better than cotton does. So that means there's less water involved. So the creation of these products are throughout going to be a more sustainable option. Mm-hmm. Now they're doing they're making a lot of different things alongside that. They're making like coasters and lamps and pots and fertilizer, which is very good. And making all these different creative things. Right now they have 23 people in the company, and they have plans to make this year alone, I think it was 2,400 carpets this year, and to hopefully, I think as soon as June, start exporting to the US, Britain, and Canada. And so they're doing, I feel like
it's one of those things where it's fun to learn about too, because it seems like they're involving the community, they're taking on interns, they're teaching a practical skill, and like, anyways, there's a lot of good stuff happening with that. One thing that I also found interesting is that, this makes sense, there's a history of creating banana textiles in the Philippines, Nepal, and Japan, and that's kind of some of what they took, I believe, their inspiration for.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Because they realize this problem, because, you know, Uganda is one of the, I believe it's the biggest producer of bananas in East Africa. So they're kind of like, this company's kind of spearheading that problem, because apparently 1 ton of fruit equals 2 tons of debris. So if they can start, boy howdy, cracking down on that. I think Uganda alone has 9 million tons of bananas each year, which means that's more of 5 tons of fruit for every person in Uganda, which is a weird,
it's a lot of fruit.
It's a weird measurement. Obviously they're, you know, exporting that and what have you. But anyways, this is one company that's doing a really awesome job. And like, because they are experimenting with stuff, they're also looking into stuff like trying to make these banana fibers so soft that they can be used in place of cotton. Because right now it's a little bit rougher. So they would like it to be, get to a place where it's like interchangeable. And then on top of it, they're also testing it as like hair extensions.
Okay.
I saw some of the looks for them. So like, not exactly, like, it wasn't perfect, but it was like starting to look good. And I was like, okay, they're not that far off. And so
we love some vegan alternatives.
Yeah. Cause
some not plastic.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I'm going to say it. I understand the need for vegan alternatives to some natural, you know, like leather and furs and such. Absolutely. But y'all, the microplastics in your $20 faux fur coat, bad.
Not good.
Real bad. Not good.
Objectively not good.
Objectively not. If we could get, like, a faux fur banana textile moment, okay.
Okay, now I'm in.
Okay.
Now you've got my attention. So for this company, there's only like one like piece of machinery that they need, and it's the extractor, which unfortunately costs anywhere from $1,000 to $10,000. So it's still kind of an expensive endeavor, right? So yeah. I think their hopes is to continue gaining interest in it, so you can get more funding for stuff like this, that you can get more research for stuff like this. Because it's like, we have the goods and we know it can be this thing and we can up the scale.
Well, cause you have to imagine, I mean, like all that waste is waste. I mean, the people aren't, you know, you chop down the banana and then that's the only revenue you get from it. But if you can turn that into multiple products, then you get more revenue. Yes, you get more money.
Yes,
for the farmers and for the local economies.
Well, the thing is that for the farmers too, like, they're obviously doing like the best they can, because chopping down these trees is like really labor intensive work.
Yeah, it's like, so you have to just like what, like burn it? Like, what do you even do with all this stuff?
So it's like, sometimes you can make it into fertilizer and what have you, but a lot of it ends up getting burned because it's like, you just don't have the manpower to run something like that.
Yeah,
and that or, you adds, know,
like
that
how
adds,
much fertilizer
that adds exponentially.
Do they need locally, like on your farm? Yeah. How much fertilizer do you actually need compared to how much you're producing?
Exactly, and then the amount that they're burning is like obviously also leading to pretty intense pollution as well, which is unfortunate. But it's like, what you gonna do?
What are they gonna do? The answer: turn into rugs and textiles, and use it for lots of different things. And that way, problems being solved left and right. Heck, let's go.
Yeah. The rugs were really cute, by the way. But yeah, so that's essentially, yet again, as per usual, kind of like, yes, we have problems. Yes, there's a lot of problems with bananas. that I hadn't really put all together in my brain until, you know, obviously very recently. But there's a lot of people kind of attacking this problem from a lot of different levels. So I just think that's cool.
I think that that's what it comes down to with a lot of your stories, is that, like, yes, this is rough, but everywhere there are good people doing the work, trying to fix problems.
Yeah. Yeah. There are times where I'm like, I do just wish this was a story about, like, oh, this is this cool thing. The problem is a problem, but not that big of a problem. And we're all fine and nothing bad happened. And here's this cool thing. But it's like, well, if I just told you about the textiles, that'd be very interesting, but that wouldn't be true to what was going on. And then you wouldn't realize, like, how cool it is that they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. Absolutely. With, like, the businesses kind of across the board, where it's like they're facing a pretty big problem and they're like, okay, I'm going to, like, start working on this chunk of it, and then you can join me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's neat.
I just think it's neat.
Okay, well. Claire.
We made it. We made it. Guys, we made it. You
cannot possibly understand the trials and tribulations that my son put me through tonight.
Oh, your son.
He was feeling rowdy.
He was processing some emotions tonight, baby.
Yeah, now he's sleeping. So where can the people find us? Who am I? Where am I?
We have a lot of places you can find us. We have a lovely little website. We have a lovely little Tumblr. We have a lovely little Instagram. We technically have a Twitter. Don't worry about that. I don't understand
how. I don't know how to use Twitter.
I'm so confused. I should put on my big girl pants and figure it out, but that's also very stressful, and I will do that, though, hopefully maybe one day. Who knows? Who knows? Who?
Maybe we'll just get an intern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maddie. What do you like, an unpaid internship?
You're not busy.
You're not hugely busy all the time with your big kid job, are you?
Yeah, what do you do? Work?
Boo. Anyways, but the most important thing that you need to know out of all of that is that we have an email. So it's chaosconsidered@gmail.com. And what we would like for you to do is, if you have any topics you'd like us to cover, send us our way. The more chaotic, the better, and send those right over to Emily. And then if you have something that sparks joy, just fork that right on over to me, and I'll find some joy in that, maybe. Who knows? Maybe I'll uncover some dark secrets.
Probably.
Most likely, yes. Because we live in a broken world.
Amen. If you enjoyed what you've heard, or even if you haven't, you can head over to iTunes and please, pretty, pretty, pretty please, head on over to iTunes, give us 5-star review. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you're following us. You don't want to miss a brand new episode of this. So follow us. Make sure you're getting those notifications, okay? And actually, yes, please, tell your friends and family. Act like you're not embarrassed to listen to us. Let's go.
Let's go. Yeah.